Okay.
And it's Asia Smiles, a Woman of Valor. I would just like to give a slight introduction of how we're going to approach it, this part of Proverbs. Okay, Asia Smile is the last part of Mishlei, and I believe it's a description of the lifestyle of a person that the book of Mishlei is second nature, that they live the life of Mishlei. Now, the reason why I believe that King Solomon chose a woman running a family is because he wanted to show a certain system of justice. And the easiest way to describe the ideas of justice is where you have a very closed system. And so therefore, within the closed system, he could show what a person that lives the life of Mishlei, how they would approach ideas of justice. And we're going to try to go through the verses in Asia Style, in the Woman of Valor. We're going to go through these verses and try to see if we could get all the principles of the way a person that lives, it's not only the study, but it's second nature, the lifestyle of Mishlei, how they would live their lives. Okay?
Okay.
So verse 10 says that a woman of valor, who can find? She is far distant then there's a big distance between the thing is that her worth is far, far distant from rubies. Okay? All right, so the question is, we have to ask questions. First of all, who can find, when it says a woman of valor, who can find, it means you cannot find it. Okay? So what do you mean you can't find it? Okay, that's the first thing.
Rabbi, can we identify valor?
The question is, what is a valor? Okay? What does it mean by valor here? Okay? And then we have to understand the metaphor about the rubies, the comparison. She's worth far above rubies. We have to understand the metaphor there, okay? We're dealing with the word chayil. Chayil could either mean, there's a few translations for chayil. It could mean a warrior, and it could mean, and also it's translated as valor, which means courage, okay? All right. We might have to redefine the word chayil. Okay, as we move along in the whole, throughout the chapter, okay? But however, just to start us off, I'd just like to say, let's stick with the word courage or a warrior. Warrior means courage, that's what it means, to be a real warrior, accepted as a warrior means that you have courage. Courage in the sense of Proverbs would mean where a person has the courage to live the life of truth. No matter what the circumstances, there's a certain amount of courage that you must do to live, in other words, to live exactly like truth. First of all, goes against your own emotions, so you need courage there. It goes against the way people make decisions or the way other people look at life, so you're going to have courage insofar as relationship to others. So there's courage that you stick to your ideas and you fight for them, okay? You live by your ideas, and your ideas totally guide you. That would be that's what I would start off with, okay? And then see if there's any changes as we go along, if there's any reason to change this definition. Okay, and the reason why they chose a woman is, like we said before, because it's in the framework It's really any they put the Torah always puts it in an example form. They give an example and then they leave the concepts to you. So he gave the example of a situation, closed, very small situation, that all the concepts of how a person would operate in a situation if they live the life of Mishlei. Okay? And now we're up to who can find. What does that mean? The reason why it says you cannot find, it doesn't mean literally that you cannot find. And now what are they writing this whole chapter for? This whole chapter would be foolish. The answer is it's a rarity of rarities to find a person that lives totally by the life of ideas. Okay? That's a rarity of rarities. Okay? Now we're up to the last part. Her value is above rubies, way above rubies. Okay, what is the metaphor? The question is, we're going back to me and so who can find, meaning that it's a rarity of rarities that you find a person that lives the life of ideas, the life of Mishlei. So the question is why is it such a rarity? Most people would agree that you should live a life of thought. So the question is why is it such a rarity of rarities? Right. Basically what both Cal and Matt are talking about is like this. In the unconscious, in that part of the person that there is that part of the person that we're not aware of, there are really two parts. There's the animalistic part that desires all the pleasures, and then there's the conscience. Okay, and the as a result of the conscience, there is a different the conscience searches for different types of pleasures. It's not is one part of the conscience is control, and the other part of the conscience it looks for ego pleasures like power, wealth, fame. You see, so that are the two parts. Most people could live either the life of the animalistic or the life of the conscience. But the life of the ideas will sometimes tell you, well, you should take responsibility. Certain place says, go out and enjoy yourself. Have enjoyment. Take care of yourself. You see? So usually a person devotes their life to the one emotion or another emotion. You see, they have them, and they sometimes it's even like from the conscience, like a person becomes very religious. Basically, it's a feeling to become religious. So therefore, they're following their emotion. It's in line with their with the attitude of their emotions. So therefore, it's a easy move to begin with. I mean, throughout the book of Mishlei, we show you the consequences, but superficially, when you just look at life, it's the simplest way to go. You see? Now, when you start the life of logic, logic tells you that you can't go based on that. In other words, let's say, for instance, you raise a child and you see that you're too strict. So now you have to train yourself not to be too strict. But you can't go the other way because then you'll be too lenient, you'll spoil the child. You see, you're spoiling the child, so then you want to go the other way, but you got to be careful. You got to know when to be nice and to give in and when not to give in. You see, what benefits the child? And each child is different. There's no, can't give a rule. In this case, you should always do it. It depends on the child. So the situations must need constant attention and constant decision making on every area. It's not natural for a person to do that. So first of all, he has to train his mind how to think that way, that it becomes second nature. And two, he has to go constantly contrary to his feelings and his emotions. And so therefore, it's a constant battle. It has to take many, many years. So at some point, it's going to hit some emotion. You even see by our forefathers, like by Moshe, that he still had these emotions where he hit the rock and and he made a mistake somehow by the circumcision with the son. I mean, there was different mistakes that they made. Yaakov made the mistake of giving his son a certain type of coat, you know what I mean? Like, which brought out his son's ego, which was an error on his part. And you see you see that it's a lifetime work, that it's constantly developing. I'm not saying they weren't on the level of Eishes Chayil. They were way past the Eishes Chayil. You understand? A whole different ballpark. You understand? But I'm just showing you that you have to constantly work to live the life of logic. And especially as a beginner, it's a very, very hard thing to start living that life, and mistakes are made. You understand? You can't condemn yourself for mistakes. It's a natural thing. And what you have to do is you should learn from each mistake. Every time you make a mistake, you should say, okay, what can I learn from it? What was my mistake? How do I change it? First of all, logically, what was my logical mistake? What emotion affected me to make this mistake? You understand? So the thing is, all these things, it's a constant. It must be where you give up your life for this type of work. Can't be like a part-time, well, I'll do it, I have 20 minutes at this time, I'll work for 20 minutes on it. It must be constant. You understand? Constant thought, constant thinking about it, working on it. In fact, they say that it's easier to be a soldier. Why? Because at least the soldier, when he's fighting the enemy, he hates the enemy, so he has an emotion on his side to go against it. But here he has to fight himself. How could he hate himself? He can't hate himself, you know what I mean? Like, he has to fight himself. And that's why they say that a person like a person like this is a statement of Pirkei Avos. For instance, when a warrior goes to war, he has an objective to destroy the enemy, right? Now here also, there's no objective to destroy. Every time you make a decision, after decision, you have to go over and say, did I make a mistake? You understand? Like, it's a constant working on the idea. It's not, well, I conquered the enemy. It's never conquered. That's your lifestyle. You have to live that way. This is who I am. It's like that becomes a new nature. You are a new person, and you think and operate a totally different way. That is the difficulty of finding this type of person. Now, since we're in the framework of a woman that's running the house, we want to know the framework of the measurement here, that it's far above rubies. Is it inherently in the person, or is she valuable to a husband? In other words, in what framework are we looking that her value is far greater above rubies? Okay? So we have to know the framework. So Laura wants to say that that usually a person, insofar as yourself is concerned, you look at it from who you are, not how you're valuable to other person. We're not talking about a slave or a slave mentality. But it could be that that's the framework that we're talking in. Or it could be we're talking in the framework of the people she's doing justice to. Okay? In other words, in general, a person that does justice does for the benefit of another person. So I'm looking at it from his framework, so then there's one way of looking at the value. If you're looking at the framework from others, how others view this person, whether it's a him or a her, right? So then it's a different value. So then you can evaluate it differently. Yeah, the thing is that Matt wants to say that in other words, he wants to prove that because it says rubies and not money. Money is your, like, let's say I would say kesef. Kesef means money. In other words, it's used, its utility is for the purpose of to use it to buy things, okay, for utility. But however, ruby is not used in the marketplace to buy things. Rubies are created to own, in and of itself. So you want to say, therefore, we're talking about Eishes Chayil in herself. Her own value is greater than rubies. Okay, in other words, so it's not talking about where the Eishes Chayil, this person is how it's you it help how she helps others, not from the view of others, but from the view of her own value. Okay, just like a ruby is not used for usage, but it's used only bought for its own value to be held on to. In other words, what we'd like to know now is we're saying that her value is greater than rubies, okay? Which means inherently, the nature of this person is inherently something outstanding. Well, we're comparing it to rubies, it's beyond the value of rubies, okay? So what we'd like to know is what is that value, but it's in the framework of the Eishes Chayil, of the person that lives the life of Mishle. It's the value from their view of life, from their view, not how, from other people's view, the benefit that other people get from them. Okay? We want to know what this intrinsic value is, but it must come from the pasuk. It has to come from the pasuk. The question is, question that I think we have to go to is, what is the value of a ruby? What is, when you say a ruby is an inherent value, not utilitarian value, so what's that inherent value in the ruby? In other words, the comparison to money is that it's not utilitarian. Okay, so but the question is, what is the value of the ruby? The value of jewelry in general is to enhance the human being. Okay, right, so that is the value of jewelry in general. You understand? It's to enhance the human being. This, in other words, what the Eishes Chayil has. It's not to enhance her, but it is to make a different person. That's why it's far above rubies. There's the inherent value of ruby. It's not that it's utilitarian in the sense that I go out to the market and use it to buy things, like people buy with gold and silver. Okay, but the purpose. Is that it is to enhance the human being that wears it. Okay? The purpose of the world of ideas, to live the life of Mishle, is that it changes who you are. In other words, one is that it enhances you, but there is no change in you. One is you become a different person, and it's therefore that different person that is far above rubies, because when you change who you are, you see, that is greater than anything that can enhance you, you know what I mean? But inherently it changes who you are, and that way it's far above rubies. And that's the, right? Okay. So we have two things from the pasuk. One, it's a rarity because of the difficulty of getting there, and two, inherently, it changes your nature, and therefore it is the nature, your new nature, that enhances you. That, right? The new nature enhances you. While there, it's something, ruby is something outside of you that enhances you. Now, let me clarify it again. In other words, the ruby is used to enhance you, but there is no change in you by wearing the ruby. You're enhanced, but there's no change in you. The person that lives the life of Mishle, inherently, there is a change in you. That change enhances you. So therefore, there's one quality which we're measuring, how to enhance the person. The person is enhanced, okay? The only thing is, ruby is something outside of you, and the Eishes Chayil is a change in the total personality. Now, the question is, what is this enhancement? okay? The pasuk really doesn't answer the question of what is its enhancement of the person that lives this life, okay? The answer probably might come from later on in Eishes Chayil itself, but it also definitely comes from the book of Proverbs, and that you're enhanced in two ways. One is the way you make decisions. You protect yourself against bad consequences, and you go out to get beneficial results, okay? That's a practical thing. And two, it helps you remove conflict, which makes you happier. So, in other words, from the book of Mishlei, what's going to happen, it's going to enhance your life in two ways, those two ways. One is it enhances your life by the way you make decisions, and it enhances your life by the happiness. By happiness, I mean the removal of conflict, okay, that will help you remove conflict. Okay, but that we do not get from the pasuk, that we get from basically from knowing the book of Proverbs. Verse 11 says that the heart of a husband is secure in her, and the spoils, shalom, the spoils of war, is not lacking, not missing. Okay? The first question is what is this security that a husband has because of her? And what does it mean that the spoils of war is not lacking? And what does one half have to do with the other half? In other words, we don't know what the pasuk is talking about. So Matt wants to say that when we look at the pasuk, we must look in the framework of the subject that we're in. Since the subject that we're in is Eishes Chayil, this must show something about the Eishes Chayil. Okay? So the question is, when it says a husband's heart is secure with her, so the question is, what does that show us about her? We said when we started out that we're dealing within the framework of a small system, meaning the family. Okay? Now, when a person relates to a system, the person that has completed, that is, the nature is to live the life of Mishlei, so they recognize the value of living within a system, and to do that which is beneficial to the system, and will never do anything to harm the system. You see? In other words, whatever system, whatever area of justice that the Eishes Chayil, that the person that lives the life of Mishlei, will operate, they will always do that which is best for the objective of the group. Okay? Now, therefore, if in our situation where it's a woman in the house, she will never use anything for her own or take anything for her own personal self, unless it's absolutely needed. You understand? Like, let's say she has to eat, or whatever certain needs are, or whatever is understood within the family, what her rights are. But the thing is, her whole view is towards the system and what is most beneficial for this group. Now, once you have an attitude that way, the people that you work with will feel secure in you, will feel secure that they don't have to worry about anything. Like, for instance, the second half, I think, is an example of what it means. He captured a tremendous amount of spoils of war. He has a lot of stuff there that a person will see the stuff. They'll take a little bit for themselves, you know. Maybe I'll use some of the jewelry. Maybe I'll buy something with it. Maybe I'll get something, because you see the thing, immediately there's a desire. He is totally secure that nothing will be taken away without a good reason or for the benefit of the family. You see? So therefore, the people, when they work with a Eishes Chayil, they recognize a certain security that they could trust. I'll give you an example. I know a person that was even sometimes like a person that's really a not nice person, he will tell a secret to a person that's an Eishes Chayil. You understand? Because he knows he could be totally trusted. He understands, he senses, or he sees that this person could be trusted. It's a different type of person that people have security that they might not want to live that life. They might, but they know they could trust him. They feel secure that this guy will do that which is just. All right, we're doing verse 12. It says, she repays good and not bad all the days of her life. Okay? What does it mean she repays good and not bad? And why does it say all the days of her life? What is that doing here altogether? Okay? I think what it means that she repays good and not bad is she doesn't take anything personally. In other words, if somebody insults her, somebody puts her down, she does not take it personally. She will not harm the person. She has the right to protect herself. Any human being has the right to protect. But however, that's not taking it personally. Personally means that I get angry with you, I'm upset with you. I just look at objectively what has to be done, and if you insult me or you hurt me in some way, I still do not take vengeance. I do not hurt you. In other words, the Asian style always doesn't take things personally, but always looks at the system and what's her responsibility in this case. If the responsibility is to protect herself, she has the right to protect herself. But she doesn't hurt back because of what people because people did her harm. So it says all the days of her life. Okay, what does all the days of her life mean? I want to say all the days of her life is really defining clearly the first half. Okay, there's sometimes that a person is hurt, but they cover it, they repress it. Okay? Years later, that repression could show up. In other words, the unconscious never ever forgets. You know what I mean? And so therefore, the Eishes Chayil is a person that has worked through their unconscious that when they're hurt, in other words, sometimes I'm hurt and I say, okay, I'm not going to take vengeance. I'm not going to get back at them. I'm not going to say anything. I don't care. But sometimes you're hurt unconsciously. You see? Well, you're not aware of it and it could show up years. That's why it says all the days of her life. Because it could show up years later. See? By her, it doesn't show up. It's just not there. You understand? That quality is just not there in the person. In other words, so the first half is saying that she doesn't take it personally. The second half is saying she doesn't even take it personally. Unconsciously, where it might show up years later, given the right situation, that unconscious anger could come out. Given the situation, she doesn't have that. She's removed she looks at life totally from an objective view as a result of the study of Mishlei. Verse 13 says she searches for wool and flax. And she makes it with the desire of her hand. Okay? The question is, she's searching for wool and flax. The question is, why is she searching for wool and flax? What does that have to do with an Eishes Chayil? And the word, she does it with the desire of the hand. The hands don't have desires. You have a desire. You understand? And then the hands carry out your desires. But what is the desire of the hand? She does it with the desire of the hand. The first half is when a person has to make something, so they get wool or linen and they make it. But she goes searching for it. Meaning that searching means that you're looking for the best. In other words, you're not just In other words, it's not just done because it has to be done, but if it has to be done, it is done in the best possible way. She does the research, she does the searching, and then she's going to make it. You see? So when she's going to make something, she goes and searches out the best, and when she searches out the best, she does it. Okay, that's the first half of the pasuk. Yes. Shira wants to say like this on the first half of the pasuk. Okay? And that is that there's certain people that are lazy. They don't do it at all. If you have a job, they don't do it. There's certain people that recognize that, like, as if there's an authority over them, like they do it based on what the authority wants. Okay? They look at it, what the authority wants. Okay? And then there's some people look at it in a total utilitarian way, and they want to know what is the best way of getting this done. Okay? So what the pasuk is saying is the Eish HaSpayel looks at it in terms of reality, and what does reality demand, and she doesn't look at it as, I have a responsibility, let me get it done. But she looks at it in a realistic way, that practically this is needed, and what is the best way of getting it done. Okay? The second half of the pasuk is saying that her nature is to look at life. In other words, I'm sorry. In other words, her desire is to be practical. In other words, certain people are like goal-oriented. Certain people want to satisfy others. They have different desires that drive them. The Eish HaSpayel desires to, she's drawn to the practical. That which is necessary for the practical, but she doesn't look at life from any type of fantasy way, any type of in other words, many times when you think of the desire, emotional desire, you look at certain preferences people have, where they'll do this, let's say, for instance, a person wants to put his energy into his profession. So he might work energetically at his profession. Certain people are energetic about their pleasures. You know what I mean? They're drawn and they do their pleasures. But the Eish HaSpayel is drawn, her desire is to be practical. That's what it means, because the hands represent practicality. The practicality, what you have to live your life by. You see? So therefore, the desires of the hand represent the desires of the practice. She is drawn to be practical. That's her nature, to desire the practicality. She's drawn to the practicality. You see? It's not anything else. Like other people are drawn to different things. They're drawn to their profession. They're drawn to their houses, to whatever the different desires. She inherently is drawn to the life of the practical. The question is, how is in verse 13, that was the first half, connected to the second half, okay? The answer is that, in other words, when the first half is saying that when she does the practical, she looks at it from a very practical point of view, and she looks at all the ingredients that she needs to bring about a certain result. The second half of the pasuk is talking about her nature, what drives her. She is driven by the practical. That's what drives her, to be practical. You see? In other words, we don't think in terms, most people don't think there's a desire to be practical. I have to be practical. You look at practicality as I have to be practical. There's a change in a personality that she's drawn to be. She enjoys being practical. When she works out practicality, it's like, you know, like another person would enjoy chess. She feels good, like, you know, she related to the practicality. She worked out the practicality. Emotion line with, yeah, where emotions are in line with reality. Yeah, you could put it that way, yes. It seems like, Cal wants to say that wool and linen and not silk and satin is because that would be the practical. Some people are looking for finery. They're what they do, they want to do things, but once they do it, they have to have a certain look. You see? She's interested, the Aisha style is interested in the practical. Doesn't bother her how it looks. You know what I mean? The practicality. It's the practicality. We're going over from Pasuk Yud, verse 10 again, to go over the different qualities that we have so far, just to review, okay? And the first one is that her development, verse 10, is her development is inherent within her in her personality, right? Now, the thing is that from the book of Mishlei, we see that the only way to change your personality is through wisdom. There's no other way. Sometimes there's a situation where a person starts acting differently. You should know that there's some situation that brought out an aspect of the personality that's already in the unconscious. Okay? Verse 11 was that a husband is secure because she's attached to a system. She's attached to the system and not to her own desires or fantasies. So therefore, since she's more attached to the system, she will not affect the system by taking for herself. Okay? So therefore, her husband will trust her. Okay? Verse 14 says, she is like a merchant ship from a distance. She brings her bread. The first question is what is the metaphor that she's like a... merchant ship, okay? That's the first thing. And the second thing, it says, from a distance she brings her bread. That's, how does that fit in, okay? The way it seems, what Matt is saying is that the second half is the quality in the merchant ship that she has. In other words, just like a merchant ship brings things from afar, she will go to far distances to bring her bread. But the question is, why does it have to have the metaphor and the quality? If it has the quality, why doesn't it just give the quality? Okay, what are the questions? And the question is, why bread? I mean, why don't you say it needs? I mean, why does it use bread? And is bread a metaphor? If it's a metaphor, then what quality of bread are we looking at? And even more so on the bread, bread is something you don't bring from afar because it'll dry out. Bread you like fresh. It should come from the bakery around the corner. You know what I mean? So it says you're like a merchant ship who brings its bread from afar. She brings her bread from afar. The metaphor bread is a funny one. Right. So Akiva wants to take a first step. It says, now boat, when it goes for merchandise, it goes across special for merchandise. There's certain people that take a trip. While they're on the trip, they might buy other things. But the purpose of the ship is to go to get merchandise, travel afar to get merchandise. This woman will travel afar to get her bread, or to get right now, it's a bread. We don't know. We still don't know why the word bread. But she will go far to get her bread. Okay? Right. Because of Akiva's statement, I want to say the quality of a merchant ship is that you have to go away from home. You have to leave home. If the practicality demands that she has to leave home, I mean, depends on her priorities. You know what I mean? There's certain things you don't leave home for. There's certain things that are so important that the house absolutely needs it. She's willing to leave home. I mean, that's a big thing. I mean, you're leaving your home, your husband, your children, and you're going off on your own. It's not a... there's dangers and there's discomfort. You see? So, her personal fears and discomfort does not stop her from that which that is practical. So therefore, the quality of the ship, it's not that she doesn't see the second half. The question is, why does it have to mention both? Why don't you just mention the second half? If I only mention the second half, it means that she would go, instead of an hour away from home, she'll go 5 hours away from home. But the quality of the merchant ship is adding to it that she has to leave home, period. She'd go away for days. If that's what is needed for the household. What? Based on what makes sense. I mean, evaluation. She'll have to evaluate. The question is, why did I pick in particular that quality of merchant ship? As I say, the Pasuk is telling us that because it already said distance. The second half is saying distance. What distance would she go? How far would she go? As far as a merchant ship would go. She'd go for days. She would be in a situation of insecurity, in danger, in deprivation, away from a family. All these things for the needs of the family. She doesn't think of her own physical needs. She'll overlook her physical need, not to death. I mean, not to die, but I mean up to a, but even though there might be discomfort and problems, she would still do that. And with that, we could answer why it uses the word bread. Bread is a basic ingredient that the person needs. She would do this by evaluating how much need is necessary. I mean, if you need a toothpick, you're not going to go traveling for 3 days for a toothpick. But if it's very basic to the lifestyle and the existence of the home, you see, like bread, when it's equal to bread, that it's very practical, that you can't go without it, so then she would go as much as it takes. The distance would not stop her, even though it's inconvenient and it's difficult to her own personal discomfort and danger. She would still do it if it's for the basic need of the of that situation. And so we want to say the quality that she has from this pasuk, the quality that the Eishes Chayil has, is where the system takes precedence over her personal comfort. By comfort, we mean physically she's away from a home, and she's psychological discomfort of being away from a family. Right? Verse 15, she gets up while it's still night out, and she gives food to her household and a portion to her maidens. Okay, once again, she gets up while it's still night out, and she gives food to her household and a portion to her maidens. Okay? So we have a few questions. First of all, it says she gets up while it's still night, and then she gives food to her household, okay? Now, what, she give it to them before they get up or after they get up? And what does the second half have to do with the... there's three parts here, that she gets up while it's still night out, and then says she gives portions to her household. When she gives these portions? And two, she gives a measured portion to her daughters, okay? So what does that have to do? I don't know what, unless Narosel means to her children. Narosel doesn't mean, I think it means to her daughters. Okay? And is this portion the food, or is this portion something else other than the food? I don't know, there seems to be three different things here, and none of them have to do with each other. Okay? And also the word teref means like a trefa. Trefa means where it's ripped apart, it's destroyed. You know what I mean? Like it dies, like an animal that's dead. Like it's ripped apart. It's not... and it's a funny word to use for food. When it says ochel, it should say food. Yeah. Use it for a household. Why does it separate between her daughters and her household? Nara says literally maidens, it's not a daughter. Bas is a daughter. Nara is a maiden. We'll ask the question. I don't know what maidens are. I just assumed it was daughter, but maybe it's something else. I don't know. And what virtue is there in getting up while it's still darker? I mean, what is that quality? It just get, should be that she gets up before the family. For some reason, she gets started earlier. But while it's still dark out, she gets up. I mean, what is it saying? You understand? As you know, we have something called trup. Trup is the musical parts. When you read the Torah, you read according to musical parts. So when you read the musical parts, so there's a certain format in reading it, okay? Now, where you know there's the end of a pasuk, okay? The eschanon, like, is a shoe, that like horse's shoe, right? That's eschanon. And then there's a self-pasuk at the one line, what's the end of the verse. So you divide it up that way. You divide it up that way, it comes out like this, that the first half of the verse is she gets up while it's still night and gives food for a household. Period. Next sentence. And a portion, to the correct portion, to her maidens. Okay? So if we start from there, maybe that will help us out. So the trup might help us out. The question is, says, and she gives food to her household, right? Household is different than family. What's the difference between household and family? Household, family is somebody I relate to. My household is like sister. It's a different thing. It's a household. Okay. Now there's two parts to the household, right? There's the family, and it could be the maidens. The maidens are people that might be outsiders. Even where it doesn't say who they are, and it could be. I'm not saying that it has to be so. I'm just saying it is possible. But at this point, I'm not 100% sure. Okay? Just taking a stand. Okay. Cal wants to say that she gets up while it's still night, means that she cuts short her own sleep. And then it says that she gives food to the household. So she cuts short her own sleep for the needs of the house. Right? The only problem is we had in the last verse, you're going to have to make a distinction between the last verse where she gives up her personal needs, I mean both her physical and psychological needs for the system, you're going to have to explain why it's doing it again. Okay? If in the previous verse where she travels to far distances, if we take away personal danger, it's hard to do that because, especially in those days when you went on a ship, there was personal danger. But let's assume that the previous pasuk is only talking about comfort. In other words, she's away from the home, so she doesn't have the comfort of her own home and the psychological of being in a family in her own home. There's a certain psychological comfort there. So if you say that, then the second half of the pasuk, what Matt and Cal want to say, is the next verse, verse 15, is talking about that she gets up at night, she gives up her needs, physical needs. In other words, the first is physical and psychological comfort. That's if you could give up the danger part there. So then it would make sense. But we're not sure if the pasuk 14 is only comfort or danger. Alright, so we worked it out if it's comfort. Let's see if we can work it out with danger so then we have it covered. But if not, then we'll have to see where we go from here. And also, if you say sleep is her needs, she gives up her needs, that's going to weaken her. You can't take away your physical needs. You know what I mean? It must be within the realm of you having the basic needs to function. So it can't be that, it has to be something other than that, that she's giving up her sleep. It can't be, in other words, after a while, if you give up your sleep, you can't function. So it has to be based on her needs. She has to have her needs.
Rabbi?
It also could be household, could be the household, meaning that if she's not giving it to them now, but it could mean that she prepares it at night and gives each one a portion before they get up. So when they get up, they already have their food in front of them. If we explain it this way, then it has nothing to do with losing anything, like losing sleep, but it has to do with the way she plans She had a certain planning. Okay? And we're not sure yet. We're still working on it. I also like to ask another question. On the first half, it says that she gives food. Okay? And the second half, she says she gives a portion. And a portion to her maidens. Okay? And so the first half seems to be that they don't get portions. They just get food. I mean, why such a distinction between food and portion? Either they should both get food, or they should both get the correct portion. There are two types of situations that you could come into with a group of people. One situation is you know each person of the group. So therefore, you have to give each, whatever you do for them, you do each according to their needs. You see? Sometimes you don't know the group, so you only know them as a group, but you don't know them individually. So then you can't give one more than the other, so you have to give them all equally. In other words, like this. Let's say, for instance, if you come into a classroom, right? So the first time, you don't know all the kids, you just teach equally. But then as you see the different students, how they struggle, how they work, some work better, some work. So then you have to start separating based on their individual abilities, you see, as much as you can. Sometimes the classroom doesn't allow for that, and therefore somebody's going to either fall on the wayside somewhere, you know what I mean? But the thing is that you have to work. When you have a group, there are two ways of working. One is like you recognize the individuals of the group, or you have no choice, you must work by the whole group. Maybe there are certain situations even where you know the individuals of the group, you have to work by the group. I'm not sure where to divide it, but I'm just saying there is that type of distinction. And it could be that it says it gives her food to a household. There she knows what the needs of every child is. You see? But the maidens, she might not know them individually. But she has to give to them either because she doesn't know them or some other factor comes in where you must deal with them equally. So it could be that if that is true, then it says that she gets up while it's still night. We'll say that that's planning, okay? And there's two ways of planning. Planning, you have to have a plan, and so there's two ways of planning. Either you plan based on the individual needs, or you plan based on the group. In other words, whenever you're working within a system, whatever system it might be, you have people there. Now, sometimes in certain situations, you can work according to the individual needs of the group, and sometimes you have to work with the group as a whole. So that's the two types. So when she gets up early in the morning, she makes her plans then. Those are the two types of plans that she could make when she's working within the group. Just once again, clarification. In other words, we're talking about the Aisha style, that she plans out. And since she is planning for a system, she plans out two aspects of the system. She could look at the group individually and give each individual their portion, or she could give the group, each one, the same amount. And there will be different situations where you work one out over the other, but it shows that she does make a plan for the group. And right, there might be other factors in the particulars of what the group's needs are. There might be a lot. The pasuk is just giving you a very basic distinction to work with. So the word teref means prey, and they use that word here for food. So it's a very strange word to use for food. It's usually animals. They rip it apart. So Jonathan wants to say that the wording is very wrong, because it says, and she gives the teref to a household. Teref is where animals grab for their own desire. Each one only, when they come upon a prey, so they each one grabs for themselves. You don't give prey, you grab for yourself prey. You see? So what's the giving of the prey? It means she gives the needs of each one according to their needs that she evaluates. It's not just their desires that she gives to, but it's her evaluation of what the individual needs are, so she gives their individual needs, but not based, that's why she gives it, but not based on what usually happens to an animal, where each animal takes what they need. Not what they need, but they take what they desire and as much as they could get. And so what the pasuk is saying, that she plans for the day, but she plans it with wisdom based on the knowledge of the group and what the needs of the group is. Sometimes the group needs to be looked at individually, and sometimes it has to be looked at as a whole. It shows that she looks at the nature of the group, and she makes the decision based on where her area of justice. In other words, this is only an example of justice, but so in other cases, I mean, it might work out differently, you understand, but it's the same quality. It must be the same quality that she plans, the Eishes Chayil plans, and then she plans it with Chachma based on the group she is working with. Zamama means like plotting, like plot. So in other words, she plans, she plots a field, when she buys it or she takes it. She buys it. Plot, like a plot. You know what I mean? Sounds funny, but that's the word. Zomam. You know what I mean? It's funny, right? But prechapel, from the fruits of her hands, not the karim, she plants a vineyard. First of all, the word plot is, you know, is like a conspiracy. Right, Zomam, it's like a conspiracy. It's a funny word about the field. And then it says from the fruits of a hand. It's not the fruits, it should be the labor of a hand. Okay? It says the fruits of a hand, she plants a vineyard. That's not true. It should be the work of a hand. In other words, the word Zomam is like conspiracy. Plotting is like a conspiracy. She makes a conspiracy for a field and she takes it. And from the fruits of her hand, she plants a vineyard. Okay, Kalon say that conspiracy is different than planning or envision, like the English says, envision, right? But plotting is a different quality of investigation, okay? All right, so the question is, what is that... what is the nature of plotting different than planning? It seems to be a different idea here. Rabbi Weiss wants to say, in the word zomam, the regular case, zomam means a false witness. Okay? False witness, it comes from the word zomain, to false witness. Adam zomam. So the thing is, Rabbi Weiss wants to say is, they manipulate the court for their own advantage to hurt, in this case, to hurt somebody else. Now, of course, the Eishes Chayil is not going to use it to hurt somebody, but she's going to manipulate the world around her. In other words, for her, for that which is best for her system. Of course, it would not be unjust or harmful. In other words, it's a different attitude. Most of the times when we think of a, quote, good person, they're not manipulative. They're people that are nice, you know, and they're straightforward, you know what I mean? But it's not so. The Eishes Chayil can be manipulative for justice or for the benefit of people. The Eishes Chayil will manipulate people or institutions, like in the case of the real zomim, an institution of the courts. So she will manipulate it, but it will never be unjust. It can't be unjust. That would be impossible. That would never be an Eishes Chayil.
but within the framework of justice, they can be manipulative to get that which is best for the system of justice that they're working in. Okay? So then it comes out very good. Then the fruits of a hand, it's not the working of a hand. She might not, whether she's going to work the field or not work the field, it could be that the fruits of a hand means as a result of her chachma, the result of her manipulation, she plants the field. That's the result. She gets a result from all types of thought. In fact, manipulation would also be one of the tools of the Eishes Chayil. In other words, when we asked the question before, it just said the work of a hand. It's not the work of a hand that she plants the field, but she plants the vineyard. It's a result. Tree is a result. It's a result of a wisdom, and in this case, it's a result of a manipulation. She will get that which is most beneficial for the system she is working for, namely the family framework. Okay. In other words, the difference between evil and the Eishes Chayil is evil manipulates for their own selfish benefit, and they don't care whether it's right or wrong. They don't think in terms of justice. She manipulates for the system, for her system that she's working for, and she would never go out of the framework of justice. She would never manipulate in an unjust manner. But it's the quality of manipulation. The question is that it doesn't say from the fruit of a mind, it says from the fruit of a hands, she plants a vineyard. Jonathan pointed out that when the pasuk started, it started with field. See, she manipulated to buy a field, to get a field, and then from the fruits of her hand, she planted a vineyard. She changed it from a field to a vineyard. So, question is, does that affect us in any way? Okay. All right, we want to say from the fruits, we want to say from the fruits of a hand, it means, from the fruits of a hand, it means that there was handiwork within the home that she made money with. That's the fruit of her hands. And then she plants a vineyard so that she upgrades the field. In other words, she first got the field. She did manipulation, whatever was necessary to get the field. Then from the fruits of her hand, she, in other words, from her own money that she made, she takes and makes an investment for an upgrading of the land from a field to a specialized type of field, which is a vineyard. Okay? And we want to say one more thing, that in general, the framework at this point, in other words, the framework of the woman in those societies, what King Solomon is writing about, is that society, the woman was really all the things in the home that was necessary for the home was up until here, even with in the verse 14 where it says she's like a boat that she goes from to a distance. It was for the responsibility of the home. But however, here she's moving out a responsibility even where her husband is involved. It's usually the man's responsibility. She will actually take over his responsibilities if there is some reason that she should. Do you understand? If it's for whatever reason, she can go out of the realm of her framework, of where her responsibility to justice, she'll do whatever is necessary, even take on the responsibility that's really not her, she's not given that responsibility. She doesn't go by what's my responsibility, but she sees what is necessary, and she does that which is necessary, even if she's going to go into her husband's domain. Meaning that she goes into other people's areas, help them with their responsibility for the benefit of the system. In verse 13, where we said she searches for wool and flax, so we said that she doesn't, when she has a certain responsibility of the home, so she. So we said there, she looks at it in a realistic manner, and not just what her responsibility is. She looks at what are the needs, but it's still in the framework of her job, of what she is supposed to be on the system. According to the system, it's still her responsibility. But this is outside her responsibility. This is not her responsibility. Over there, it's a, in the nature of responsibility, there's two ways of looking at it. I look at it, I just got to do whatever's necessary, or I look at it and I do that which brings out the best results, and whichever is necessary, even though I could get away with working less, I'll do that which is the best, but it's my still my responsibility, it's still the way I carry out my responsibility. But over here, it's not the way, here, this is out of the realm of our responsibility, she's taking on a new responsibility. Right. It was interesting to see the quality of manipulation that the Eish Chayil could be manipulated, but the essence of the pasuk seems to be that she takes on other responsibilities besides her own when she sees that which is necessary to be done. That is the quality that the Eish Chayil has, that this pasuk is adding. And we see that she works with wisdom in this situation because she invests an upgrade there, so therefore you see that she's looking for the future of the thing, so she where the results, she's looking at the results, so therefore that is showing the wisdom of the Eish Chayil thing. In verse 17 she says she ties with strength her loins, and with strength or strain or courage, with strength or strain her arms. In verse 17 says she ties with strength her loins, and with strength or strain her arms. Okay, now definitely this pasuk is totally metaphorical. I mean, there's nothing, you know. The only metaphor that we could think of is by Eliyahu, where he ran in front of Ahab. So it says he girded on, he tied his, I think it was his coat, so it shouldn't blow in the wind while he was running. And usually, in general, it usually means preparation to work. Okay, it's preparation to get down to business. Understand? So, again, Rabbi Weiss wants to say that that what it means is that sometimes when a person has to do something, so there's a certain mental change from the inactivity to the new thing. There has to be a certain thought process where they have to work through it to do that which is necessary. While her, as soon as the Eish Chayil is worked through in the thoughts, is so worked through that as soon as she sees the necessity, she's immediately ready to do the action. The action, from the thought to the action, is not like a stretching, or, you know what I mean, like a sec, like starting to think it through, work it out, to be able to operate. It's not thinking through a plan you must work through. But there's an emotional, like resistance. You know what I mean? Like from the time you hear it to the time you carry it through, you have to work through your emotions. While the Eish Chayil doesn't have that, she goes from one step to the other. And one time I heard an interpretation that says that you should wake up in the morning like a lion. So he says a lion from inactivity to activity is one jump. But the human being, when they wake up in the morning, there's something called stretch and turning over. Now the thing is that usually for most people that happens, the stretching and turning over. So the stretching and turning over is during the school week. But on Sunday, when it comes to going to the baseball game or the basketball game, so you're up in one shot. And we're saying that the Eish Chayil, or the person, the way you should relate to Torah with the example of the lion, it should be his desire to do that which is real and practical, and it should be so important to him, should have such a desire that there's no working through, like it's immediate, like Like that's the personality of the Eishes Chayim. And so the question is that she strengthens or strains her arms, meaning that's for the job already. She's immediately into the job. She's not straining to do the job. She's immediately in the job. All her energy is immediately in the job, okay? And the other question that's being asked is, the other question is that what is this quality of that prevents you from carrying it through immediately? And the first step is that you must say that an idea to the Eishes Chayil is immediate reality, okay? The other person, it's not, okay? But the question is what is operating in the person in that resistance? In other words, it's true, the reality is not immediate, but what is the relationship? And I think the relationship is that in other words, the first step, what's immediate, is the conscience. Conscience, there's always a conflict. You see? Then when they work it through, then they change to Chochmah. In other words, that's a development, a certain level. It's not a beginner anymore either. In other words, there's certain people that even after they learn Eishes Chayil, they still go back to the old framework. They haven't changed the framework at all. But there's certain people that there is a change. They have a certain level of reality, but they still have the old conscience there, you see? They're not doing it totally from reality, they're doing it from the conscience. So the immediate is what is totally how you operate. The immediate is really who you are. So the thing is, the immediate is the conscience, but then the mind starts thinking about it, so there's a resistance. Whenever there's the conscience, there's always a resistance. But then the mind takes over, and then they're able to get down to business. You see? It shows that they still have the conscience. You see? But however, the Eishes Chayil doesn't operate based on the conscience. She operates based totally on Chachma and wisdom. So it's immediate. There's nothing interfering with the reality. The question is why don't I want to work? Is because I go back to the infantile view of life. In other words, the infantile view of life is that I want to do my own pleasures, my own fun. Responsibility is something not in the framework of the infantile view of life. So there's a resistance, you see. So, but the Eishes Chayil, all her energy and all her desires have become to live the life of the practical. The question is, what's the difference between the first half of the pasuk and the second half of the pasuk? Okay? At this point, we leave a certain amount of creativity for the listener of the state. Tama means she discerns or she thinks that her business is good and her candle does not go out at night. Okay, so the question is, what is it talking about? I mean, like, what does it mean she discerns that her business is good, and what is it telling me that a candle doesn't go out at night? And what is the first thing I have to do the second thing? Okay, what we want to say is there's a certain quality of success that when you have this success, so people either, like, there are two types. One type of person is like, well, now I can take it easy. I'm successful, and he's not as careful as before. And two is sometimes there's certain emotions that affect the way you relate to a business when you're not successful or you're building up the business than when you are successful. Okay? There's certain things that you feel a certain security that, so you don't check things out. It's a failing in most things. By her, it's all practical. So therefore, she just keeps going. Even when things are good, she goes in the same path of wisdom. That's the way she operates. In other words, her emotion of success does not blind her in any way. Success blinds people. And the emotion of success does not blind her. Now the question is, success is usually apparent, and here is Tama, she discerns that her business is good. So the question is, why does it use the word discern? So the thing is, I think that the that what it's saying here is that when it becomes real to the mind, in other words, sometimes a person has success, in, you know what I mean, like, doesn't really, in other words, it's not real to them that they're successful. Certain things happen, then they're successful. She, first of all, what is real in the mind. So as soon as the mind sees that she's successful, that's when the emotion of success will take over. By her, she only operates based on reality. You see, like the whole idea, what is success? Success means that I'm above reality. There's something beyond. You understand? Usually that's what it means. I am above everybody. You understand? Most people have a relative value system, and they evaluate themselves in relationship to others. So when they're successful, they feel very good. Now I can relax. I beat them out. I'm successful. You see? But as soon as that sense comes in, that affects the person's emotions, dependent on how success, what his emotions are, how success affects him. But by her, it does not affect her. Success does not affect her. And she just looks at it as part of reality. It was a result of my work. Now let's move on. Make sure I don't lose what I do have. In other words, most people just is in relationship to others, but her view is only insofar as the system is concerned, with the particulars of the system. Is it working? So therefore, if it's working, that doesn't mean you can't stop. You got to keep working for the system. But however, if it's a personal thing, a personal gain, so then success affects you differently. A distaff and a spindle are two opposite sides. Like, in other words, you have the distaff, it seems to be where you have the flax on it, and the spindle is where you wind the flax away from the other side. So it's two ends of the spindle and the distaff is two ends that work with the flax, okay? So she sends her hand, she stretches out her hand for the distaff, and her hands hold the spindle. Okay? The question is that, like, suddenly out of the blue, he suddenly throws this pasuk, and like there seems to be a certain order that he worked in. And suddenly he throws this pasuk in, like it's just totally out of whack. You know what I mean? It's not, it seems to be, doesn't belong here. First of all, it belongs in the first half, in the part of the, where she works in the house. In other words, the order was that the first half talked about her responsibility in the home. Then it went outside the home. Now suddenly it jumps back into the home. Okay? In other words, the pasuk is out of context. The first half of this, where we started, we took her responsibility of the home. Then the next thing is, we went out into business. She spread out into business. Now suddenly we're taking the quality of the home again. It's out of context. There's certain people that evaluate the value of their work. And many times a person feels that the value of a homemaker, of a person involved in the home, is lower than a person that goes out to do business. So, but she doesn't look at, you know, she doesn't evaluate that way. She evaluates only in terms of the system, what is necessary for the system. So despite the fact that she goes out into business and is totally involved in building a business, she does not lose her responsibility for the home. She still sticks to that responsibility of the home too. In other words, she will only go outside the home if she has the ability to do both. If she doesn't have the ability to do both, then she must stick to her responsibility. What a lot of people do is they give up their responsibility to go out to what they think is the greater glory, you see, and then they go out for that. Because it's only somehow of a... but anyway, so So it's saying here that she takes her responsibility and does her responsibility. Even though she takes on more, she never gives up the lower level. Or it could be there might be other emotions that she's involved in business. It might not be this emotion. It might be other emotions. She gets involved in the business and she's afraid of, she's up all night. They're working, like it says, a candle never goes out. She really puts a lot of work into it. She gets involved and she loses perspective. Somehow she's losing perspective. Okay? Right. So we're saying that the Eishes Chayil doesn't lose perspective. Right, we're up to verse 20 where it says, a hand is spread out to the poor and a hand is stretched out to the extreme poor. Okay? So the question is, what is this pasuk doing here? In other words, the last pasuk went back to the home so that we explained why it went back to the home. Then now in verse 20, it's suddenly we're dealing with the poor. And then 21 goes back to the home again. So the question is, what is this verse? It seems to be out of context. What is this verse doing here? The question is, why doesn't it say that she gives to the poor? It just says a palm is spread out and a hand stretches out to the poor. It doesn't say she gives to the poor. What I think, I'm answering the question why it's out of context, okay? I think why it's out of context is like this, is that her essential job, where she recognizes her responsibility, is in the home, okay, and for the home. Like doing business is also, even though it's out of her realm, but it's still for the home. But that doesn't mean she closes off her mind to other areas of justice. Other areas of justice, she's still aware of, despite the fact that she's all that her main responsibility is the home. She still recognizes that there are other responsibilities, and she doesn't close her mind to it. And she works for that whenever she can, within her ability. Okay. A household is not afraid from the snow because a house is dressed in scarlet. The quality of scarlet, according to the Mitzvot Dovid, is to it keeps warm. It's a certain type of clothing that keeps warm. Okay, so the question is, what is the quality that this pasuk is telling us? It should say that a household is warm because of this type of material. It says a household is not afraid of the snow. Okay? Question is why. She also makes a bedding. This is verse 22. She also makes a bedding. And the next word changed is a very expensive, according to Matthias, you know, it's a very expensive flax. And our gum on is something that's woven red. That's and it's a very seems to be also an expensive type of clothing. Okay. So the verse saying is that the bedspreads are very expensive, right? That she makes, and they're dressed in very expensive clothing. Well, Lavusha, I think she dresses. She's dressed in luxurious clothing. Okay. So it says, again, the two verses are talking about the material that had the clothing that's in the house. One is they're not afraid of because it's warm. And the second, it's expensive things that are in the house. Luxurious. And the question is, what quality are we talking about in the Eishes Chayil? Like we first thought that maybe since they're both talking about clothing that they're similar, but we are going to separate them. Verse 21 seems to be talking about that she, because of her personality and the way she lives her life, so people feel secure with her. They feel secure that she'll do that which is necessary. In other words, they could rely on her for the for that which is needed. Even though the pasuk is saying they're relying on the clothing itself, that they're not afraid because the clothing itself is that way. It's not that they're relying on what she's going to do, what she already did. So that would be difficult according to the wording of the pasuk. I will try again that they are connected, okay? And it says that the 21 and 22 is talking about two aspects, okay? A home is practical. The home is set up on a very practical level that covers all the practical. And two is there is room for comfort. There's a certain luxuriousness that which is comfort. In other words, a person has a right to enjoy life. It's not everything is practical. There's certain enjoyments, you see. So she has both. The verse is saying she has the practical, that's 21, and 22, she has comfort. The comfort. In other words, she takes care of psychological needs, right? The psychological needs that are like a person likes a certain amount of comfort, so there's psychological needs. That's verse 22. The question is that how far do you carry your comfort needs or your psychological needs, okay? We're talking about in the psychological needs, you got to be very careful because in the psychological needs, are the addictions and the yetzeran, the harm that comes because of the emotional decisions that you make. You see? So, of course, you would not give in to that which would harm a child. But there's certain psychological needs that are not of that. Like, for instance, let's say you enjoy lazy. You know what I mean? You enjoy certain things that are not addictive and that you could live with that, but if you have all your needs and the done with, so then you have a right to give it to the psychological, as long as it's not going to draw you to the into this type of pleasure, which will draw you too far. There's certain pleasures which is nature is to draw you. Okay, the ancients used to call it the loud pleasures and the quiet. The loud which is draws you, awakens great excitement. You understand? The others, they're quiet, you know what I mean? Like, there's no great excitement, but it's comfortable. See what I mean? Okay, verse 23, it says, a husband is known in the gates when he sits with the elders of the land. Okay? The elders of the land used to govern from a certain place they used to call the gates. Okay? So he's with them. Now, again, this verse is out of context. And also, what does it have to do with her? Okay? In other words, since she takes care of everything in the house, so a husband doesn't have to worry about making a living. So he could go out and do be on a Sanhedrin, on a court, be part of the court, be part of the, run the system outside of the house. He is secure. He doesn't have to worry about the business. He could rely on her in running the house and the home and the business, so he could do justice and righteousness outside the home. So now that's within the framework of what we're talking about. How would that fit in the general view of the ideas of justice? Okay? So Matt wants to say that that she really can't, according to Jewish law, she can't be on the court, in the court system. And so therefore, but she facilitates to make sure that her husband can. In other words, where you cannot do justice, there's areas where you cannot do it, you facilitate others to do justice. You see that by King David, where he was not allowed to build the Beis HaMikdash, the temple. But what he did is he prepared everything that he was allowed to. He prepared everything for it, up until the point to where he was not allowed. Once he was not allowed, then of course he didn't do it. Because God wanted King Solomon to build the Beis HaMikdash. But King David had such a desire to do the will of God that he did everything up to the point, even though he knew he couldn't complete it. It was in the hands of somebody else to complete it, but he facilitated that it should be done. Now the question is, why does it say that he's known in the gates? Should we just say that he's in the gates, he does his justice, and that's it? Well, where does it come that he's known? Because it is, in other words, like just like the example we gave, you hardly hear about that David, what David did. You only hear what King Solomon did because he completed it. People are known by completing the thing, not by doing the beginnings. And the